The Blaze Radio Network. On demand. Glenn Beck.
Well, the FISA memo bomb has been dropped. It's pretty much confirmed everything the Republicans have been talking about in interviews for the last 2 weeks. I don't think there was really anything new. There was just Republican confirmation on what we already knew. Is that why the information was a little, I don't know, a little underwhelming? It was billed as a memo full of classified information, and I honestly struggled to find anything that could be considered damaging to national security. Well, what happened there? That makes the Democrats, the FBI, DOJ, look kind of ridiculous trying to block its release. Why were they trying to block it? What was in that memo that was so damaging that people could lose their lives? It also makes the Republicans look a little bit ridiculous, I think, in the buildup and the hype that led to Friday's release. Don't get me wrong. The information is really interesting, really interesting. And if proven correct, it shows that there is corruption in the United States. The GOP is accusing the FBI and the DOJ of lying to the FISA court in order to get a warrant for former Trump advisor Carter Page. Carter Page is somebody that we've been looking at for quite a while ourselves. The FBI was looking into Carter Page long before anybody else was. They claim that the Steele dossier was listed in the initial FISA application, but the roles of Fusion GPS and the DNC in the Clinton campaign were never mentioned. That is the problem. And here's why. If it is true, then the FBI and DOJ were knowingly trying to pass off partisan opposition research as actual intelligence. And they hid the truth from the court, not once, but four times. They would later include things like a report from Michael Isikoff. Isikoff said he was shocked that his reporting was used as something to bolster the FBI and DOJ's case in the FISA court, because he was only reporting on what was already out there. He was reporting on the dossier. This wasn't new reporting. This wasn't a secondary source. Was that the way that it was presented to the FISA court? If so, that's a very big deal. It looks really bad. However, it's only half the story, and we're not going to get the other half from the Democrats. The Democrats have already written their own rebuttal memo, and they are expected to vote on that later this week and release it. I think if they release it later this week, they're going to vote, I think, today. We can also expect to hear from the FBI and the DOJ at some point as well. It's the Great Memo Wars of 2018. When is this going to end? I don't care what somebody wrote in a memo to make their side look good. I really don't care. I want the facts. Transparency is the answer. Not more memos. Transparency. If we want to know, because this is what this is all about, what did they say to the secret court to be able to get the warrant? If they didn't tell that this was opposition research and that Michael Isikoff's, you know, reporting was not confirmation or a second source, it was an article on the dossier. If they didn't say where the money came from, the Fusion GPS connection to Russia, the FBI's connection to Fusion GPS through its own agents, and the agents, their spouses, connected to Fusion GPS and connected to the Hillary Clinton campaign. It's a real mess. If they didn't reveal all of that to FISA, then there's a massive problem with the Obama DOJ and FBI.
It's Monday, February 5th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Now, here's what's hard. It doesn't matter to the Russian part of this investigation. If the FBI was investigating Carter Page in advance, which I believe they were, if he went over and did things that he shouldn't have done, we have to know that. And it really has nothing to do with Donald Trump. They were investigating him before Donald Trump. They were looking into his connections because he was being recruited by the Russians. He's a dope. So who was he meeting with? What was he saying? We have to know that. We also have to know the connections with Uranium One and all of the billions of dollars that came in from Rosatom to our congressmen, our senators, and our Department of State. What was the connection between Russia and the Clintons? They clearly tried to recruit or befriend the Trump administration. We know that. It didn't happen. And it didn't happen because they didn't have the goods. We all also know that if in that meeting they would have had the goods on Hillary Clinton, they would have taken them. Just as fast as the DNC took the stuff from Christopher Steele, they would have taken it. That's the problem. The problem is everybody would have done it if they could have. So you can't arrest people for what they didn't do, what they would have done. That's not a crime. You have to go after the source, and the source is Russia. Tomorrow, I'm going to start a chalkboard that I think we might even have to go back in time and look at Russia again. And show you exactly what their intent was. And it had nothing to do with Donald Trump. They would have done it if it was Ted Cruz. They were doing everything they can to make sure that we don't have confidence in the system, that our confidence in the voting system was destroyed. Our confidence in the two-party system was destroyed. And when I say the two-party system, why do you think that, WikiLeaks, I'll just refer to it as Russia. Why do you think Russia released the information about the DNC and what they did with Bernie Sanders? Why do you think they did that? They did that because they needed to break up the coalition in the DNC and not to get Donald Trump to win. They broke that coalition because they needed the infighting that the press is refusing to cover right now, which is a huge story. They needed the Democrats to turn on each other. They need the Republicans to turn on each other. And then those four or eight or how many groups that breaks into, they all fight with each other. That's what they want. Every bit of chaos that they could sow, they've sown. And we're ignoring it. It's really, you've got a brain tumor. And the doctor just keeps giving you, first it's aspirin, then it's Tylenol, then it's Tylenol 3, then it's Percocet, then it's a fentanyl patch. For the love of Pete, man, what's the problem? What's giving me the severe migraines? Oh, I don't know. It's a giant grapefruit tumor in the middle of your head. Russia is the tumor. These memos and everything else, that's fentanyl. And if you've ever had fentanyl before, you know how spooky that stuff is. And it says right on the box, or it used to, maybe it doesn't anymore. Somebody who has fentanyl, call me up. Tell me if the box still says this. 10 years ago, the box on fentanyl, which is a little patch that is, it's a great blessing. If you're in pain, it's a great blessing. But if you're in pain and you take it, it's also a great curse, because the clock on you begins to tick. It says on the box, or it used to, for end of life use only. It's when they just want you out of pain. You just want to be out of pain, and you're going to die anyway. Honestly, we're so far beyond. Do you realize? We're going to talk about this later. Do you realize that our borrowing this year? Do you know how much we're going to borrow as a country? I'm going to tell you this. I want you to think about that. In 2008, we had about $800 billion in circulation globally. So all of the cash, if you took every dollar, every dime, every penny, every quarter, every $100 bill, and you put it all in a pile and you started adding it up, all of it up, we had about between $800 and $900 billion in cash globally. This year, to keep our government running, we are going to borrow $1 trillion. We're going to borrow $1 trillion. To give you some indication on if that's a big deal or not, that's an 84% increase from last year. Anything that takes our eye off the ball of limited government, of reducing spending, of giving money to the people. No, I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that. Letting people keep their money and not taking it from them. Being able to guarantee some sort of transparency, restoring the credibility of any institution that has lost its credibility, and that's really everything. I mean, all the way to the bakery. You know, the baker might hate people. Anything that has us take our eye off the ball is a refusal on our part to look at what is causing the headaches. It's a tumor. And the press is doing nothing but putting a fentanyl patch on our arms. For end of life use only.
Glenn Beck.
There's some really disturbing things that are happening over in Europe that are, I believe, at this time, being orchestrated by Russia, and it's here as well. And we'll have to talk about that coming up. I just want to go into this memo just a little bit more about Jason Petrillon. And Jason is our head researcher, and we've been going over the Russia stuff and following the Uranium One and the Russia connection there. Also, long before Donald Trump was even a nominee, even stepping in and saying he wanted to run, before he was a candidate, we were talking about Russia and what they were going to try to do during this election. They've done it. One of the names that came up, and for the life of me, Jason, I can't remember why. Why did we first start talking about Carter Page? Because we were on Carter Page before he joined the Trump campaign, and I think even before the campaign itself.
Yeah, there was that weird string of, I want to say it was like around 2008, 2009-ish, something like that, of like heavy Russian, espionage and influence. It was just all of a sudden it just came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And there was the whole thing with Anna Chapman and that huge ring that the FBI busted up. And then there was this strange story of these Russians that were trying to get close to Wall Street, and they were doing everything they could to try and infiltrate like think tanks and other people that were surrounding like our financial institutions and structures. This is actually some pretty scary stuff.
Yeah.
Well, during that time, the FBI got on through human intelligence sources and also surveillance. They come across these Russians that were talking back and forth to each other about this quote unquote idiot,
right,
Carter Page,
right.
And apparently Carter Page, he's, I don't know, the more you look at him, he just seems like a guy that just wants to be liked so well. Mm-hmm. He goes to, you know, to Moscow, and, you know, he was a an investment banker or something like that with some energy companies over there. And every time people talked about him, he was just the guy that, you know, just wanted everyone to think that he was a little bit more than he was. Mm-hmm. And he was doing everything.
He wanted to be somebody.
He wanted to be somebody. Yeah. He wanted of influence. So him saying that, yeah, I'm connected to Trump, actually made sense, because mm-hmm. he used those types of connections mm-hmm. to try and appear to be more than he was. Mm-hmm. Well, he was just got onto the he was on the FBI's radar when these two Russians were talking about him, and they were like, yeah, we're trying to get into, you know, this company, and we're like talking to this guy Carter Page, and he, you know, basically doesn't know what he's talking about. It's a dead end. Well, those were SVR, the equivalent to our CIA. That was Russia's, you know, foreign intelligence service. Mm-hmm.
And what they were saying when they say he's a dead end is he was all talk.
Right.
That he really didn't have any connections, and they mocked him, ridiculed him because he wasn't a big deal, and they quickly figured that out.
Right. But so you can see how the FBI, though, their radar shot up, though. That you already have this guy. He's been taught. He's been known to, you know, probably unknowingly. I don't think Carter Page knew that he was being targeted by Russian intelligence. Mm-hmm. But because of his connections there, and because of connections he was having when he was going over to Russia, which he again, the Russians were targeting him when he would travel to Russia when mm-hmm. he was based in Moscow. Mm-hmm. And of course, basically, you know, everybody's connected to Russian intelligence or the mafia or something in Russia anyway. But all the people that he was dealing with and running around with, all those circles he was in, the moment he was actually signed on with the Trump campaign, they were like, oh, whoa, what's going on? That gave them the probable cause to say, okay, maybe we should look in a little bit more.
Right, and it's not necessarily that Donald Trump knew any of this or anything. Carter Page is a moron.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of guy that gets into trouble.
Yeah.
And then you couple that with Flynn and Manafort, and Trump doesn't even have to be involved in any of this. And it doesn't even have to have collusion between Page and Flynn and Manafort. It's just a really big bonfire that somebody needed to look at. And we still need to look at Carter Page, General Flynn, and Manafort.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So I just want to see if I have this right. Because I think I slipped through a wormhole. I don't know when it happened. But I am. This is definitely not the same Earth that I was on, you know, for the rest of my life, for the earlier part of my life. And I believe I've slipped through several wormholes. But this one, just let's do the math. Last night, I watched the Super Bowl, and the game was the best part. The game was actually compelling and exciting. The halftime show really lacked any kind of, you know, malfunctions. It was good. Prince, even though he was dead, sang a duet. As I'm watching, the commercials all sucked. Nothing really held my attention in the commercials. Then Brady loses. And the Eagles win. Come on. This is not the Earth we all were on just last week. I am not a sports fan, and I was, it was compelling. I can't remember the last time the Super Bowl was this compelling. And what happened to the commercials? Seriously, what happened? I mean, I had a hard time. My daughter said to me, Dad, Justin Timberlake is the king of pop. Excuse me, what? Dad, Justin Timberlake, he's like the biggest pop star of our generation. wait, the guy, he would, wasn't he the guy in NSYNC? Yes, Dad. Oh, good God. And he's the best your generation can do? Wow. We're in deep trouble. We had a conversation. I remember taking my daughters. They were young. I remember taking them to an NSYNC concert, and Justin Timberlake flew over their head. And it was the biggest deal for them. And I remember I didn't get my hearing back from, you know, the 13-year-old girl screams for about a month. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the best hearing experience, if you will. I really even couldn't hear him sing. I think last night was maybe possibly the first time that I've actually heard him sing. And again, King of Pop? Are we just throwing those titles around higgledy piggledy now? I mean, is it? It may just be me. I don't know. So I had a difficult time last night. I thought he was great. Great might be a little strong. I thought he was very good. I thought he wasn't offensive. How's that? I thought he wasn't offensive. And that's a big deal for the Super Bowl, at least lately. But then we get to the commercials. And I mean, when the Danny DeVito, you know, M&M commercial is the most memorable for me, and it's mainly because I haven't had an M&M in about 2 months, you know, that's a problem. I don't know what happened. Is everybody afraid to do comedy now? Is that what's happening? Is everybody just like, can't do that? You can't do that. Danny DeVito, you're going to point out that he's bald? What about, you'll be sued by the bald people. There'll be riots on the street. No, it's a white guy. It's a bald, white, old guy. Everybody hates those. Oh. So that's the only thing that we'd probably make fun of, maybe? Is that what it is? Because I was intrigued by the movie trailers. I liked the movie trailers. Thought those were good. But not, if the game wasn't good, nothing would have held me. Nothing would have held me. May I address the MLK problem? The MLK commercial with the Dodge Ram. Did anybody really have a problem with this? I mean, I did, but it's not the problem that everybody else has. Here is the commercial for the Dodge Ram that aired last night in the Super Bowl.
You don't have to know about Plato and Aristotle to serve. You don't have to know the theory of relativity to serve. You don't have to know the second theory of thermodynamics in physics to serve. You only need a heart full of grace. Soul generated by love.
And then it goes to the logo of Built to Serve, Dodge Ram. Okay. The controversy is, how dare you? How dare you use Martin Luther King like that? How dare you use Martin Luther King? I mean, first of all, that was an inspiring commercial. I mean, anytime you can hear the words of Martin Luther King, that should be a good thing, right? The problem is, well, I should say, everybody's problem is that Dodge would use his words to sell a truck. That's an abomination. How dare Dodge use his words to sell a truck? May I just point out, I can't play speeches from Martin Luther King on the radio. I can't say to you, I want you to really listen to this speech. I want you to really listen to this. I can't even play the I Have a Dream speech today. The only day I can play that without getting sued is Martin Luther King Day. His family has such a tight rein on all of his words and all of the audio and all of the video that you literally cannot play the I Have a Dream speech except on that day, or they'll sue you. They are as protective as Disney is with their trademarks. So it's not, don't blame Dodge. Dodge had nothing to do with it. Dodge came up with the idea and said, we're going to do a deal on service, and our slogan for our truck is going to be built to serve. It's a beautiful commercial. It shows people serving. It shows police officers. It shows fire. It shows people helping each other in the inner city and on farmlands. It shows people helping people in, you know, hospitals and babies and all of the stuff. It's a great, stirring commercial. And it was such a good commercial that the King family decided to sell the rights of their father or their grandfather to sell the rights to Dodge to be able to make that commercial. So anybody who is on the high and mighty path today, how dare they use, first of all, good. How many people heard the words of Martin Luther King? I've never heard that speech before. I love that. I've never heard it before. So how many people heard that speech from Martin Luther King for the very first time last night, thanks to Dodge? So I don't understand your complaint. And if you want to take it up with anybody, take it up with the King family. Because the King family approved, and I can guarantee you, cashed a check because of it.
Glenn Beck.
Okay, there's a couple of things that I want to bring to your attention that are kind of difficult at times for people to understand because they feel good. And, you know, don't, you know, pee all over the party. But it's always a careful balance. And this is something that we've been talking about for the last 10 years or longer. And that is the budget and jobs and how the monetary system works, how the Fed prints money, what it's trying to do. We've gone over shows. Last week I did a chalkboard again on the velocity of money. And that means how many times a dollar is spent by someone from the moment it's born at the printing press to the time it comes back to the Federal Reserve. So it goes from the Federal Reserve to the bank. The bank then loans that money to a business to, you know, increase, you know, and build new widgets. That money then is spent on buying something. So there's number one, the business buys something with it. Then whoever that dollar ends up in, they either put it in the bank, which then is returned back to the Fed. There's one, or they spend it on something. They have to spend it on, you know, gas or food. So they spend it, let's say, at the grocery store. What does the grocer spend that dollar on? Because now we have two. If the grocer goes out and he buys something, let's say he wants to go buy a new TV, there's three. What is the TV people? What do they spend that money on? Well, they've had a good year, and so they're going to go on vacation. There's four. When they go out on vacation, then they spend that at a restaurant, and they give it to a tip as a tip. There's five, and it goes on and on and on. When our country is doing well, that dollar is spent about 18 times, between 17 and 18 times before it returns back to the place of its birth, the Federal Reserve. During the Great Depression, that number was, I think, 6.4, meaning the velocity. Nobody was spending money. They were keeping their money. They would get it. They had to spend it on essentials, and then they would put it away. So it would return back to the bank, and it had no velocity. Nobody was buying anything they didn't need. It was in the mid-sixes, maybe 6.2 during the Great Depression. Very low. We're now at 5.6, and that's why they've been priming the pump. That's why they've been printing all this money, trying to get somebody to spend it. Now, let me give you a couple of stories. We just repatriated, which means we just lowered the taxes down to, I think it's 20% for these companies like Apple. Apple has, I'm going to round these numbers, They have, I think, about $300 billion outside of the country. U.S. dollars sitting in a bank doing nothing. They're now bringing that money back in because the taxes are low, and that's why they're going to build new offices and new buildings and new products, and they're hiring people and they're giving bonuses. The same with Microsoft, the same with all of the big companies. The big companies have $2.4 trillion sitting overseas waiting to come home. That's why when we keep priming the pump, it's not going anywhere because people will buy things and then it will sit in a bank. And it'll sit in the bank with these companies, or it will go to Wall Street with these companies. They're not spending it on you. They're not building new product because you're not buying them. So now we have two things going on. The federal government wants to do a $1.5 trillion stimulus, which is, again, they say it's for infrastructure, but it's just to get people spending money. At the same time, the government now is set to borrow $1 trillion. $1 trillion. This is an important announcement that happened last week that nobody paid attention to from the Treasury Department. $1 trillion this fiscal year. That is almost double what the government borrowed last year. It's an 84% jump. U.S. Treasury expects to borrow $955 billion. It was $519 billion last year. The uptick in borrowing is another complication in the heated debate in Congress of whether to spend more money on infrastructure, the military, disaster relief, blah, 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 blah. The debt is already up significantly, even before Congress allots more money to any of these other areas. So what is the problem with this? I need to explain this. We need to go into what is spooking the market today. Inflation. Why is inflation a problem? Too few goods, too much money chasing those goods.
Mercury.